I'm an addict named Lance. Hey, everyone. First of all, I want to thank the Laurel Highlands area for asking me to come up to share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to give a special thanks out to Mike for asking me to do this. He had faith in me to come share my message. This is not something I really like to do. This is not something I enjoy to do. But I understand that, like, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, they told me that if someone asked you to serve in Narcotics Anonymous, that you should serve in Narcotics Anonymous. And I know that this is just a very small part of what Narcotics Anonymous is about, but it is serving in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm a little white boy from the suburbs. You know, I'm not like Mark. I was never in jail. Well, I was, but it was a holding cell for like 24 hours. I don't really call that jail. I was never in population. You know, I never shot anybody. I didn't live in abandoned buildings. I didn't live in cardboard boxes. I didn't use crack. I didn't use heroin. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I thought there was something wrong with you. There definitely was nothing wrong with me. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I heard a reading, and the reading said that you didn't care about who your connections were, what you had done in the past. All we cared about is what we want to do about your problems and how we can help. And what I found out through Narcotics Anonymous is that, like, you know, the dope was only 10% of my problem, you know. My major problem started when I was a little boy. When I was in eighth grade, I remember we were in gym class, and after gym class, we all went to shower. And I remember getting into the boys' locker room and going in the shower, and I had my little white towel that was halfway around my body, right, and I was clenching it, right, because I was nervous about how big I was down there. And I remember when I got into the shower stall and I saw all these other kids, and I identified myself with mine wasn't big enough, so that means I wasn't good enough. And from that point on, I always tried to be better than I was. I never wanted to be me. I always wanted to be you. And whatever you did, you know, I felt like it's what I needed to do to fit in. And so, you know, I had the small wiener syndrome for a long time, right? Until one day I started drinking some alcohol. And all of a sudden, my dick got real big. And then I woke up the next morning and realized it was still small. So when I found alcohol and that did that for me, I thought to myself, right, because, I mean, I've got a pretty good brain, you know, I'm not dumb, that, like, wow, this alcohol really, it's fucking magic, man. And then I started smoking weed, and what started to happen to me is that, like, I finally became the person that I always wanted to become. I finally thought that, like, I had finally arrived, like, I was finally comfortable in my own skin. I didn't have to, like, follow you anymore. Like, I really was never a leader. I was always a follower. I wanted to act like I was a leader. I wanted to act like I was a big shot. But for real, I was just a little scared boy. I was just insecure. And whatever you did, I was okay with doing. If you jumped, I jumped. If you ran, I ran. If you robbed a bank, well, fuck it. I act like I knew how to rob a bank, and I tried to rob a bank. You know, I did whatever you did just because I wanted to be a part of. So when I found drugs and alcohol, it took all of that away. I no longer had that feeling of I have to be inadequate. I'm no longer inadequate. I'm now a part of something, you know. And I started hanging out with these guys that were doing all kinds of crazy shit. And, like, and I found out that, like, people were starting to notice me, even though I was only 5'2". They were actually starting to look at me and notice me that, like, I was in the area, that I was there, and I was present. And I started being the class clown, and I started doing all kinds of just stupid, crazy stuff that we do when we use. The problem with that is a lot of times that comes with consequences. And what ended up starting to happen is those consequences started to build up, right? Until one day it was like, I don't know, February of 92. And, you know, I'm from a suburb called Monroeville. It's in Pittsburgh. And I never went to this city. I didn't know what the Hill District was and what Wilkinsburg was and what Homewood was. Like, I heard them on the news, right, when I watched the news, but, like, I'd never been there before, so I didn't know what it was about. And I was in Squirrel Hill at a party, and some guy asked me to take him home. He said he lived in Wilkinsburg. I'm like, sure. I dropped him off. He said, look, I want you to go in here and make a right, get you back on the parkway, you'll be good to go, you'll be back in Monroeville in 15 minutes. And I remember dropping him off, and I swear to God, man, I made that fucking right. I swear I made that right, but like about 50 feet down the street, I realized that there were two big do not enter signs that I just went down a one-way street. And when I went to turn around, I ended up turning around the Wilkinsburg Police Department, right, in their parking lot. I'm talking about a white guy, right, in a white Ford Sable at 4:30 in the morning in the middle of Wilkinsburg. Like, I understand today that that was really dangerous. Back then, I had no fucking clue. And I'll never forget, there was like five cops that ran out, you know, surrounded my car, rolled down my window, asked me why my eyes were red. I told them I had strep throat. They said, we don't believe that shit. Step out of the car. I said, no, really, I'm sick. And they found a bag of dope in my pocket, and they cuffed me, and they took me into the Wilkinsburg holding cell. And, you know, for a guy like me that has never, ever, ever been into a place like that, it was extremely scary for me, right? And I remember I sat in this cell with this woman who was out of her fucking mind, man. She was trying to stretch the bars, right, to get out. And I'm telling the guy that there is something wrong with her. I don't belong here, right? Why am I here? I don't belong here, right? And they took me down to the Allegheny County safety building, and the public safety building, to hold me to go in front of the judge. And I remember I was up in a cell with about 13 other people. There was two steel benches. They served us fucking soggy hot dogs on soggy buns and orange Huggies to drink. And I remember looking around in the cell, looking at these people that I was in there with, wondering, how the fuck did I get here? What did I do to get here? And I'm scared, man. I'm 5'2". I'm thinking one of these guys are going to either fuck me or try to eat me, man. And in the cell, there was a wall, and behind the wall was a toilet. And I had to go to the bathroom, right? This is for you, Mac. And, like, I went around to the toilet, and it was, like, almost overflowing. It wasn't quite overflowing, but it was close, right? It was one of those things, if you sat your ass on it, your ass would go in the water, right? So I nicely asked the police officer that was sitting in front of the stall or sitting in front of the jail if he could get a plunger, right, and plunge the toilet so I could go to the bathroom. And he looked at me like I was fucking crazy. I'm like, bro, I got to go to the bathroom. He said, I really don't give a shit what you got to do. And, like, at that moment in my life, I realized something. I realized something that I had never realized before. I realized something. There might just maybe be something wrong with my life. There might be something that I'm doing that just isn't right. And I'll never forget that I got released on my own recognizance that night. And I had my first trial that night. And, I made it home in enough time to smoke a joint before I had to go to the hospital to see my daughter born, because, you know, that was important to me, right? And my daughter was born, and I remember my family telling me that that they're no longer going to support me anymore, you know, that I need to straighten my life up. And I really didn't think my life was bad. I mean, you know, for a guy that didn't really know anything, I mean, I got on welfare, you know what I mean? We got food stamps. You know, we had big grill outs the first of the month, and we were eating oodles and noodles on the 30th. I mean, it was a pretty good life for an addict like me, man. I didn't have to do shit and got paid for it. So they told me that I had to go to rehab, and I went to rehab, and, you know, it took me 6 months to complete the 30-day program, because I'd go a week and not show up for 2 weeks, and then go 3 days and not show up for 3 days. But something happened in that rehab. Y'all fucked up my heart. I could no longer use, every day that I woke up after I went out of that rehab, it was not the same. I could no longer use, and I've heard it in Narcotics Anonymous a lot, that, you know, we talk about a belly full of dope and a head full of NA just don't mix. And, like, you guys are right, it just doesn't mix. And, you know, September 23rd of 1994, I finally made the decision to try to change my life. And, you know, I haven't felt it necessary since that day, since September 23rd of 1994, to use. You know, and a lot of stuff has happened in my recovery. I got clean when I was 21 years old. I don't really have, like, a huge dopalog, you know what I mean? A lot of shit that I did clean. A lot of the crap that I did, a lot of the slimy stuff that some people did when they used, I did it clean. You know, and I'm not suggesting that anybody do that. I'm just telling you, this is my story. This is what happened to me. So So when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, right, you know, things were a little different back then, man. I was just talking with a friend last night. Like, we had a set of meetings that we went to. We didn't have cell phones. We had pages. We had a set of meetings that we went to, right? And we piled in the car. No one drove alone in Narcotics Anonymous, man. You know, we all piled in the car. There were seven of us. We'd go to the meeting, and after the meeting, we'd go to this place called Daisy's. And I'll never forget Daisy's is the first place that I experienced coffee, right? And I had, like, 8 cups of coffee. And I remember going home and being, like, 3 in the morning and being jittery and shaking and calling my sponsor and feeling like, dude, I was like, dude, did I fucking move tonight, man? What is this shit that they put in this coffee, man? And he was like, it's okay, man, don't worry about it. And I remember the next night, go back and doing the same thing, you know. I remember, you know, hanging out at people's houses. I remember all of us going out to dinner afterwards. And, like, Narcotics Anonymous was such a bond. I had finally found a place that I could actually kind of be me. You know, when I first came in, I was still fronting it. I was this person that I really wasn't. But, like, through the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, I found out that, yeah, I am a white kid from the suburbs. Right? And that's who I am. I'm okay with that today. And yeah, I've got a lot of black friends. Right? And yeah, I go to the Hill District for most of my meetings. Right? That doesn't make me any different. It doesn't make me any better. It doesn't make me any worse than you are. Right? And what I understand about Narcotics Anonymous is this disease doesn't give a fuck. This disease doesn't care if you're black, if you're white, if you're fat, if you're skinny, if you've got a big dick or a little penis. It doesn't give a shit. It wants to kill you. And only through Narcotics Anonymous did I realize that. So when I first came in, we stuck together, man. You know what I mean? There was none of this drama of beating each other up and talking about, you know, well, there was a little bit of drama. Shit, man. You know, it's society. You know, Narcotics Anonymous is a society within a society. You know what I mean? Whether we like it or not. And there's going to be people in NA that sell drugs. There's going to be people that come to meetings just to hook up with a woman. There's going to be people that just come to meetings just to get signed, to get slip signed. There's going to be people that come to meetings that really want to change their life, you know. And I suggest if you're not hanging around those people, you need to look who you're hanging out with. Because, see, a lot of the information I first got in recovery was bad information, right? I got some bad information when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. And I followed that information, and my sponsor guided me. And I trusted and believed in everything that he said. If he told me to go in that corner and stand on my head for 2 hours, I went in that corner and stood on my head for 2 hours. Because I just wanted the pain to go away. I just no longer wanted to suffer anymore. You know, I wanted the hole that was inside of me that was deeply just bruised to go away, man. I killed my... The drug isn't what really killed me as much as... Damn, she's trying to beat me out. The drug didn't kill me as much as I killed myself. I beat myself up so bad because I wanted to be a part of something so bad. I wanted to just fit in. I wanted to just be me. But I was always afraid that you were going to judge who I really was. So I always had the front that I was something else. You know, and Narcotics Anonymous taught me that I no longer have to do that. The steps told me that once I look on the inside, because see, this is an inside job. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I cleaned up my outside, right? I got a girl. She was a 10 on the outside, a 2 on the inside, right? We had a couple kids. I got a nice house, $150,000 house. I got a good job. I was making good money. I had everything that I ever wanted, everything that my family told me that I needed in order to succeed in society. I was missing one simple thing. I was missing me and all of that. You know, and at 15 years clean, right, I had 3 kids. I had the house. I had the beautiful wife. She was nasty when I met her, and she was nasty when I divorced her. But, like, see, I understand that today. I didn't know that, right? I didn't know that. There was a process that I had to go through to understand she was a bitch when I met her. I'm the one that married her, right? Why wouldn't she be a bitch when I divorced her, right? She's the same person. She hasn't changed. See, Narcotics Anonymous allows me to grow. So, like, at 15 years clean, I had all this stuff. But I was missing something inside, man. I was missing something so deep inside. I was missing the freedom that you guys told me that I could get in Narcotics Anonymous. And that at one time in Narcotics Anonymous, I had. But I had lost somewhere along the way, right? I got caught up in society. I got caught up in money, property, and prestige, right? And they tell us in the book that will divert us from our primary purpose. And it diverted me. So I had all this stuff, and I made a decision to leave my wife. I made a decision to leave my 4 children, right? A week after I left, The company that I owned that I was doing so successful got sued for $17 million. Ended up filing bankruptcy on that company. I ended up filing personal bankruptcy. And at 15 years clean, I ended up sleeping in my brother's basement with nothing but me and God. I had nothing. You know, I've got to tell you, 3 years later, I've come through that. You know what I mean? I no longer have, you know, panic attacks every other day, think I'm dying and my arms up gets all fucking numb and I gotta call 911. I was calling my sponsor every other day. I'm dying. This is it, Jordan. I'm done. It's over, right? I mean, cause I was having a panic attack. I was fucked up, man. I was, you know, they talk about, you know, when it comes from the heart, it will touch the heart. And they talk about, you know, being in the fetal position, clean, right? And like, I was there, man. I know what that feeling feels like, and I never want to feel that feeling again, right? So I had to go out and get another job. I had to go and fight for custody of my children, right? To see them on a regular basis. And she still gives me all types of shit about it, right? There's still weeks that I go to pick up my kids and they're not there, or she'll cancel on me, or something like that. But through the support of Narcotics Anonymous, you guys have taught me I can only do what I can do. You know, my oldest daughter, I haven't spoke to in a year and a half. You know, that hurts me. I didn't get to see her graduate. I didn't get to walk down the field with her, you know. And that's a girl that I raised in recovery myself for the first 5 years of my recovery. You know what I mean? I got custody of my first daughter, right, before I met my crazy wife, my crazy ex-wife now, right? So where I'm at today in my recovery is that, like, last Monday, I got a phone call from one of my friends, and he said that one of our other friends was in a bad car accident, and I didn't really know what that meant, and I never knew what true friendship was in Narcotics Anonymous. I never knew what true support was in Narcotics Anonymous until these last 3 years. And I got to tell you, I was sitting in a restaurant, and when I hung up the phone, I thought to myself, what am I going to do if this man isn't there? How am I going to live my life without this guy in my life? And for the first time in my life, I finally felt the feeling that, like, I had a true friend. And I'm telling you, if you don't have that feeling about the people that you're hanging out with, get some new motherfucking friends. Because there are people in Narcotics Anonymous that want to support you. There are people in Narcotics Anonymous that want to see you get better. Let's stop beating people up and reach out the hand to pick them up and help them off the ground. You know, I was one of those guys that, like, I've been around here for a minute, so I've seen some people come in and out, you know, of the program, and I was one of those guys that used to judge that guy. What the fuck can't that guy get clean? Well, who the fuck am I to say when he gets clean and when he doesn't get clean? My responsibility as a recovering addict in Narcotics Anonymous is to carry the message. And the message is that no addict need die from the disease of addiction. That any addict can get this program. That's my job. That's my message. That's the message that you told me that I need to uphold. So, like, today, I had true friends today in Narcotics Anonymous, right? I mean, I have people that actually care about me and call me. And when I don't call them, they call me to see how I'm doing, right? I never had that. I always waited for the dope man to call me back. That motherfucker never called me back. I always had to chase his ass down. I don't have to do that today. I got people that love and care about me today. So, now I'm divorced. I've never really dated anybody. And I think that it's time for me to start dating. So I talked to my sponsor that I need to start dating some women in recovery, outside of recovery, wherever. I just need to start dating. So, like, I sign up for 7 websites, right? 1 is too many for me. Fuck it. I need 7, right? I got better odds with 7 than I do with 1, right? And I sit down at the computer and I write my biography out and, you know, I type it all out and I'm so proud of what I wrote, and I thought it was just poetry in motion, and I post it online, and I'm going on these fucking websites, and no one's emailing me. I'm thinking, what the fuck is going on here? Why am I not getting any responses, right? And I go to my sponsor says, look, let me see what you wrote. And he says, this is terrible. terrible. I said, damn, I thought it was pretty good. So he changed it up a little bit, and I got a couple of emails, and it wasn't working, man, right? It wasn't working. And I found out in recovery, anything that I try to push seems not to work. And I'm not sure why that is. I mean, we talked about the God thing, right, and trusting in God and trusting in the process. But, you know, sometimes in some things in recovery, like, I'm just not ready to fully trust God in that area, right? So, like, I was at the point where, like, it really wasn't working for me. And I got to be honest, I really don't know how to talk to women. I get choked up, and I get, you know, I get caught up in what to say and what not to say, and I get embarrassed, and I get very insecure, and I'm very shy. And I'm in Ocean City 2 years ago. Yes, it's 2 years ago now, yeah. And, you know, I told my sponsor I was really struggling in this area of my life, and he said, listen, man, this is what I want you to do this weekend. I want you to find a woman. When she gives you the look, I want you to go talk to her. And, like, when he told me that, I was thinking to myself, well, what the fuck is the look, man? Like, I don't even know what the fuck that even means. But there is no way I'm going to let him know that I don't know that he knows that I don't know what the fuck the look is, right? Because my ego will get in the way sometimes, right? So I find myself the whole weekend looking around for someone to look at me so I can get the look. And Saturday night, I'm walking down the steps, and I finally think that I get the look, right? She looks at me, I look at her, she looks at me, I look at her, I think it's it. I go outside, I say hello to her, I give her a hug, you know, I get her number. Oh, no, I don't get her number, I'm sorry. I ask her for her number, and she tells me that her girlfriend inside has her phone. And I said, well, that's okay, I'll wait for your girlfriend to come outside. She said, no, you don't understand. That's my girlfriend. Like, I'm with her. And, like, I'm like, you mean out of 6,000 motherfuckers, I picked the only gay motherfucker in here to come up and talk to? Like, what's wrong with me, man? You know, because, listen, a lot of times I'm my worst enemy. A lot of times I beat myself up more than anybody can beat me up. You know what I mean? Like, I really don't like doing this thing, and I never think that I do a good job. And I always, like, don't like, you know, I always beat myself up afterwards. And I said, I should have said this, and I should have said that. And, like, you know, sometimes I just need to let God do his work, man. Right? And just let God do whatever he has to do and just step the fuck out of the way. I find my most peace in my life is that when I get the fuck out of the way and I let God do his work. You know, when I left my wife at 15 years clean, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know where I was going to go. I never knew how I was going to get back on top. And I just let it go. And all of a sudden, 3 years later, I have everything that I had 3 years ago. You know? And that wasn't because of me. That was because of the God of my understanding doing the work for me. I just showed the fuck up, man. That's all I did. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous taught me. That's the one piece that I've taken everywhere. Is Narcotics Anonymous said, if you show up and you do the work, you can get what we have, right? And, like, I have found that through my entire life, that if I apply these principles in every area of my life, that I will get what you guys got. You know, I started this thing that, like, I like to go to strip clubs, right? And listen, I'm not sharing that to be funny or anything. I'm sharing that because, like, I like to go there because of my insecurities about how I feel about me, right? And I know when I go to a strip club and I got a pocket full of money, that, like, that girl's going to like me whether I look good or not, right? She's going to give me what I want. And what I want is the validation from her to make me feel good on the inside, right? So I'll go there looking for the validation to get that, right? And she'll give me the validation once she gets me upstairs, right, for the $300 room. Then she gives me the validation. And then what happens is that I leave the club and I go home, right? And I'm laying in my bed all by myself, and I get that gut-wrenching feeling, right? You know that gut-wrenching feeling when you're just out of dope and you've got no more money and you don't know where you're going to get your next one at? Like, that's the feeling that I get when I do that. But I continue to do that over and over and over and over again. I'm talking clean over and over again, right? I spent tens and thousands of dollars at strip clubs getting the validation, right, from somebody else to make me feel better about me when all I had to do was start working some fucking steps. When all I had to do was just pick up the pen and just write a little bit about me. where all I had to do was just get a little honest about how I'm really living and what I'm really trying to do with my life, you know, and not come up to the podium and try to share some crazy old fucking crazy shit for you guys to laugh and say, man, you did a great job. That's not what this is about, man. This is a healing process, right? This shit's real, man. This is life or death. And I no longer want to get validation from you. I want to get validation from me, right? I want to know that I'm okay on the inside, not only on the outside. I want to know that, like, my God loves me no matter what. Even when I'm doing the right thing, right? Even when it doesn't feel right, right? You know, sometimes we do the right thing and it doesn't feel right, but it is the right thing anyway. That's what I'm looking for, you know? I'm looking for that peace on the inside today. You know, I'm looking for that piece where, like, you know, one of my predecessors, you know, used to say all the time, I don't pray for those storms. I just pray for peace through the storm. And, like, I want to be that guy, right? I want to be that guy that, you know, some guys will come in a meeting and they'll share real easy. Oh, man, I let that shit go. It was easy. Like, that's not me, man. I got fucking claw marks on shit before I let it go, right? For some reason, I got to go through all kinds of fucking pain and heartache in order to get some kind of fucking peace, right? Why can't I be one of those guys who just comes in and says, you know what, I'm just done with this today. Like, that's not my story, that's not who I am, that's not what I'm made up of. So, like, just for today, you know, if you're new, please, please find someone in Narcotics Anonymous that cares about you, that loves you, that wants to see you get better. It's important. And if you have not found that person, keep looking. He's there. I'm going to ask him to let me show you.